Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm your host, Dan Eastman, and today is Thursday, September 7th, 2023. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I really appreciate your viewership. As you know, we're broadcasting on WVW-TV, which is a great source of news and information. We've been broadcasting since about 2006, and we're happy to bring you really interesting viewpoints and alternatives that you're not going to hear on the mainstream media. So we're really happy to be able to continue broadcasting and bringing you this information without a paywall or a subscription or other costs. Although you are welcome to certainly support this work. And we'd like to thank all of our viewers and our supporters, as well as our sponsors, for keeping us on the air and keeping this information flowing, because it's a great economy and a great society demands a marketplace, a free market of ideas, as well as a free market for goods and services. And we're part of that free market of ideas. We bring you our viewpoints based upon reasonable analysis of the facts presented, and hopefully you're finding benefit, and that's why you're tuning in. So thank you very much. I'd also like to thank my sponsor for this program, Swiss America Trading. And if you've been watching, you know that Swiss America Trading is a great American company based in Arizona, and they are a fine purveyor of precious metals. So if you're thinking about adding precious metals to your individual portfolio, you might want to give Swiss America a call at 1-800-519-6271 and ask them to send you some free information on this area of investment. And or you can go to their website and use the promo code EASTMAN, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, and they'll be happy to mail you the free investor information. It's really worth a read. If you're interested in investing in this sector, you really want to do your homework and study up, and they're happy to provide that information and show you what they have to offer. As you can see on the screen, these are some of the products they offer. Of course, they have gold and silver and platinum bullion coins, which is a very easy way for the regular person on the street to own gold. These coins give you some comfort because they are minted by governments around the world. And you're looking at the American Eagle, and you're looking at the Lady Liberty standing. But the American mints will mint these silver, gold, and platinum coins. And of course, so do the Canadians and the Austrians and the Australians and the South Africans and the Chinese and the UK. And there's all sorts of countries that are making bullion coins. And when you buy a bullion coin, you have the assurance of knowing that a government minted that coin with, let's say, an ounce of gold. If you're buying a 1 ounce gold coin, there's an ounce of pure gold in there, pure to 0.999 some percent. And you'll know because the government has manufactured that coin that the quality and the quantity is as stated. And of course, that's what you want to know when you're buying tangible precious metals, is that if you're buying an ounce of gold, you'd like to have an ounce of pure gold, not an ounce of diluted gold. So this is an easy way for people to rest assured and buy bullion coins, knowing that the fact they have what they paid for. There's also ways of owning gold in other forms, silver in other forms. That's called bullion investing. And bullion is basically poured blocks of metal in various and sundry sizes, not like the coins are 1 ounce or half ounce or tenth of an ounce, but bullion comes in all different sizes. And these aren't minted by governments. These are manufactured by refiners with a long, long history worldwide of refining gold and silver. Of course, refining of gold and silver has been going on since, if you read first book of the Bible, Genesis, they talk about, gold being refined. So the point is, if you're interested in a larger quantity or maybe a smaller quantity or just not a coin, bullion investing is available. And again, to get more information on how bullion works and the market for that, call Swiss America, 1-800-519-6271. Go to the website, use the promo code EASTMAN, and they'll send you the information and explain all of this, because you really want to know all of this before you invest in anything. And this is a great way to do it. It's not a high pressure thing. No salesman will call, but at the end of the day, if you want to get information from a reputable dealer, this is a good place to come. They also sell numismatic coins as investments. And that's a big fancy Greek word that basically means coin collecting or collectible coins. And there's a bit of an interesting thing. Before the 1933, coins were minted in the United States out of gold and silver. sort of minted after as well, but not after President Roosevelt made it illegal for citizens to own gold. But before that, the government was minting in gold and silver coins, and those coins had a value or a gold or silver content based upon the exchange ratio to paper money back in the day. It was a very complicated time, and the Treasury was issuing gold and silver coins, and of course, banks would have gold deposits and would issue banknotes, which effectively acted as currency. But anyway, if you're interested in collecting antique coins, coins minted before 1933, Swiss America makes a market in those as well. And of course, those value are based on the gold or silver content, in addition to intangibles like the condition of the coin or, you know, when it was minted and the mint mark, where it was minted, or, you know, some famous person owned it before you did, then it adds value. So anyway, all of this is explained in the information that Swiss America is more than happy to send to you. So give them a call, 1-800-519-6271, or go to the website, use the promo code Eastman. Hey, send me the free information on investing in tangibles, and I want to know. So then you'll have something to read. And while you're doing that, you should also ask them for their special report that they've published. It's very interesting, and it's very timely. It's called The Secret War, and it deals with the secret war on cash. And more in the news, especially if you're listening to alternative viewpoints of the financial markets, you're going to hear more and more concern, even in mainstream financial reporting, about this idea of digital money and having a wallet owned by the Federal Reserve, and all your money's in this wallet. And it sounds great, you know, what, other than Fort Knox, what could be safer than the Federal Reserve for your money? But at the end of the day, the reality is, if they have the ability to turn your, keep you from spending it on certain things, or maybe you don't vote for the right candidate, so they turn your money off, you go broke. Or maybe you're overweight and you want to buy a can of soda, and they say, no, the algorithm says you have to buy the diet soda. You can't. They can control what you buy and what you spend your money on, which is an absolute affront to the individual dignity of a person. Because since the beginning, since creation, people have had the ability to make economic decisions for themselves. And if the government steps in and takes that away, or limits it, or just gently nudges you away from the bag of potato chips, that's a real problem. And I think we have to be cognizant. So if you ask Swiss America, they'll mail you that report. You should read it and understand it and get your head into that issue, because money's digital. It's getting more and more digital. And all they want to do is to be able to control it, to control your behavior. And if that were to come to pass, it would be yet another diminution in the rights of individuals. It would be a bad thing. So at least it would be a challenging thing. I think it would be a bad thing. Anyway, give them a call, 1-800-519-6271. Ask them for The Secret War Against Cash. That's a very worthwhile read. And even if you're not interested in tangibles, at least give them a call for this report, because they'll be more than happy to have you. Anyway, okay, let's jump into the news for today. Of course, this being Thursday, and it's now the first week, the week after Labor Day, and that's always a big week, because we are starting the next adventure of end of the third quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter, and there's always a lot of news. And I think I was talking yesterday about some of the issues with respect to the budget that's coming up. Because we don't have a federal budget that is approved and passed and signed into law by the president, we've been living on continuing resolutions and other types of legislative activity for decades. And effectively, the budget is sort of an advisory thing rather than a set in concrete. So, and there's some policy reasons for that. If you'd set a defense budget of, let's say, $1 zillion, and we get invaded, then the $1 zillion isn't enough. So, but you're stuck under law. You can only spend $1 zillion, and then the bad guys come in and we lose. So there's always been at the federal level this federal flexibility, which of course is grossly abused in the political system. There's always an emergency. There's always a crisis. We had a big hurricane now. It looks like, you know, the last hurricane blew through Florida and into Georgia. Well, now the next hurricane might blow up the East Coast and all the way to New England. And, so there's always a crisis. There's always an emergency. There's always a reason to spend the public fisc, especially when there's no fiscal consequences for doing that? I mean, would you rather vote on make people happy or say, no, we can't spend $1 billion because we're broke? Of course, you spend the money, and that's the political system that we live in. And you know, without some massive change in the Constitution that would require a federal budget to be balanced, this is the reality that we live in. So you have to assume that the people you elect to Congress are going to have some reasonable basis for their actions. And of course, they don't. I mean, it's just spending and spending and spending and spending and spending. And the spending has become delinked to the country's revenue. And of course, the country's revenue is the tax, the income tax. And I suppose there's gasoline tax, and there's federal excise taxes and duties and all of the things that comprise the revenue of the federal government. But if you add that all up, what you end up finding out is that they come up short year after year after year after year after year. And of course, when we look at the federal budget, or at least instead of saying budget, let's just say the amount of money the federal government spent in one fiscal year compared to the revenues taken in that fiscal year, there's a deficit. And there's been a deficit for a very, very long time. During World War II, there was a huge deficit because we had to borrow and spend, and they were selling war bonds, and people would buy the government bonds, and we'd spend and spend and spend because we had to defeat the Germans, the Japanese, we had to win the war. And then there was a short period of time when the federal budget came back into a semblance of balance. And then that all kind of blew up in the 1960s. And from then on, there was only one time, which is a very arguable. There's one time where the federal revenues actually exceeded the federal expenditures. And that was one of the years in the William Clinton administration, which I don't envision President Clinton as being a spendthrift, miserly guy, but I guess all the chips lined up, and he had one lucky year where the budget was, let's just say, balanced. It wasn't, but he came closer than anybody else. And ever since then, it's just all been downhill. And of course, 9/11 didn't help things, and the crash of 2008 certainly didn't help things. So at the end of the day, we're in a deficit spending situation right now that is effectively driving the federal deficit to unheard of highs and unknown consequences as this continues. And of course, the pressure that federal deficit, of course, balance, then you think about $32 trillion in debt. And we borrowed that money to spend at the federal level. Okay, we spend it on defense, then on all sorts of aid programs, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, all the programs. And the fact is that the American tax base is large enough to support the federal spending that's going on. It has been going on year after year after year since probably World War II. And that's the way it is. So we're in a position where the federal government is grossly spent beyond its economic means. And therefore, we've racked up this massive deficit. And of course, now we're getting to the point that the federal fiscal year ends September 30th. There will be programs that have to be reenacted by Congress, signed by the president to keep the lights on, like Federal Aviation Administration. It'd be nice to have people who are controlling the airports. One example. So there's always ongoing pressure to continue pushing the federal spending to exceed what we take in taxes. And of course, this is having a very big drag on the economy, because not only is the federal government going into the global economy itself and borrowing money from that economy to re-spend on government programs, so it really creates a competitive environment where others who are borrowing money for plant equipment, other countries, they're paying more in interest because there's a demand for money. And when the federal government of the United States steps in, of course, that's theoretically the best quality debt instrument you can buy. So therefore, if you want to sell in that same market, you're going to have to pay a higher interest rate than the federal government of the United States pays. And it really starts to distort markets. And this is a real serious problem that the Congress is going to have to try to deal with. But as we know, we watched back in March, the Congress tried to deal with bumping up a self-imposed debt ceiling, only to effectively suspend the debt ceiling. They just said, okay, we're opening the barn door, we're going to spend like crazy. We will deal with it in January of 2025, just as the new president or the winner of the election will be sworn in January, whatever that is. Probably the first thing on the Resolute desk is going to be, hey, we're broke. So it's going to be a really interesting ride for the new president or the next president. So anyway, that's a real difficult situation we're in. And as a result of the massive debt, that tends to be inflationary. And if you look from an academic perspective, a research perspective, there's been a lot of work done on economies and countries who have printed and spent, and racked up massive debt to the point where the debt is now the debt service is approaching a good chunk of the tax revenues and beyond. So you get yourself into a doom loop at a point where the debt service, and you can do this to yourself as a family or as an individual. You just go rack up debt and credit cards and student loans and mortgage to the point where your debt is service, the debt service, the monthly payment is so high that it peaks beyond your paycheck, so you have more debt service than you have take home pay. And then you still have to buy groceries and clothes and buy gasoline, at some point you find yourself insolvent, and that becomes a real problem. Of course, you march off to the bankruptcy court where they'll probably restructure you back into mainstream America. But the federal government can't do that. You just can't file for bankruptcy. I mean, countries can go broke. I mean, countries have basically run themselves into this nightmare and then gone broke. It basically triggers social unrest and instability. But at the end of the day, those are bad outcomes. So what you really would like to do is figure out how to generate more national revenues, which means raise the taxes. But I was looking at numbers earlier this week. What would the tax rate have to be on every American if you wanted to bring the budget back into balance? Just have a balanced budget. Never mind the $32 trillion in debt, which is now 33, actually, as of like a couple of days ago. But what would the tax rate have to be? And it's shockingly high. It could be 68%, 72% of your income. This isn't, we have a progressive income tax in the U.S. where if you are rich, you pay the highest bracket, and if you're low income, then you pay little or nothing at all. Well, this would be everybody, every nickel and everybody earns 70% off to the federal government just to support the spending levels we're at right now. And that the question is, in a democracy, we're a republic, we're basically, our democracy happens at the local polling place, and we send a representative off to Congress or the Senate, president, even the state level. But when we do that and we send people and there's no restriction or break on spending, it becomes it's just a free-for-all. And of course, the lobbyists are in there. If you're a professional lobbyist, all you want is a pile of money because your industry needs money, okay? And you go to Washington or Madison, Wisconsin, or whatever state capital, and your job is to go get money. They're not sending you there for lunch. They will bring the money or rules or regulations or statutes that allow us to make more money rather than less. That's the whole process. So really, if you're in the middle or just an average American, this whole circus is going on around you, and you may not even be a participant in any of this stuff. Well, I don't have a lobbyist, and I don't do this, I don't do that. Just kind of sitting here, and you get your paycheck, you pay your bills, and kind of wondering, why in the world is gasoline, $3.83? Well, I saw a story today talking about that very issue that. Of course, the Russians, it's always the Russians, and the Saudis, they had agreed to cuts in oil. And the reason the cartel, the OPEC cartel and other producers, sort of a club of oil producing countries, will effectively monitor the outflow of how much each country can produce to keep global oil within a price band. So as we see with the Saudis and Russians, of course, Russians are rather busy in Ukraine at the moment, and they just love to crank the crank the oil off because A, oil's not going anywhere, it's in the ground, and B, it hurts the United States. Well, effectively what happens is, of course, the price of oil goes up. And we were talking yesterday about, we're looking very soon at, oil being $100 a barrel again. And I think Brent closed 2 days ago at $87 and $90 for Brent. It's North Sea oil. And then the West Texas Intermediate was 87. So it's really a band of 87 and 90. And now we're going to be looking at over 100. Well, the news story today, of course, is that the cost of gasoline to average people is going up. And they're estimating in some states in the Midwest that you might see a dollar a gallon increase. Now, I'm not sure which price is locally. Ours is about $3.89 today. So if it goes into the fours, especially in a place like Wisconsin and Milwaukee, this is not a rich place. This isn't like Texas or California or Florida where all the zillionaires live. The Midwest, at least Wisconsin, is very much populated by working class people who live on relatively modest means. And they do a good job, they work hard, good people, and it's a great place. But when gasoline goes over $4.25 a gallon, that becomes a huge issue because a lot of the people in Wisconsin are just workers. Well, some people are farmers, a lot of people are farmers. But at the end of the day, if you think about it, healthcare in Wisconsin is about 42% of the people employed in Wisconsin are healthcare workers of some sort or another, from the doctor to the technician to the, the therapist to whatever. So, and these people all drive to work. Okay. So when you're making a, it's a modest salary, it's certainly a livable wage, but when your gasoline commuting prices go up to $4 a gallon, $4.25 a gallon, that puts a big hole in your family budget. And that's a real problem. So then when you go to the grocery store, you see starting to see inflation and some of the products you like to buy, some of the foods you like to enjoy are up in price and your gasoline is in, up in price. And then, it starts to really, really tighten the family budget. And that's the squeeze. And of course, these people are doing nothing but working their jobs all day. Nobody's engaged in the international oil market or which country's fighting the other country. These are people who get up in the morning, they go to work, they earn their paycheck, they pay their bills, try to have a little enjoyment in life. And at the end of the day, that is the crowd that's really, really getting smashed by these policies. And if you have to raise the federal income tax to help cover this deficit, then it becomes very, very burdensome. And of course, there's another story today that adding to the stack, and I don't mean to be totally doom and gloom, but I guess that's why you watch financial news, but there's another story that really caught my eye that the health insurance costs are going up by 6.5%. And that's a big jump. Now, we're thinking about inflation at 9%, year over year, which is now down 3%. And you think about your health insurance costs going up by 6.5%, 6.5%. That's a big bite because the way health care is structured in the United States is effectively that cost to employers. And I'm going to use our numbers up here. It's about $14,000. If you offer health care to an employee in your company, you're going to be paying out about $14,000 in premium. And the other half is going to come from the worker. So, the total cost of insurance for a worker is, somewhere between $14,000 and $25,000 a year just to provide health insurance. And of course, when that premium goes up, it goes up, it's a cost to the business because that's the way it works. The policy. And if it's going up 6.5%, then the company is going to be paying 6.5% more next year for healthcare than they are this year. And then the trick is, well, you've got to cut it down the middle. You pay half, we pay half. Well, the minute you do that and you raise somebody's, their take-home pay is going down by the amount. So I was fiddling with the deductible. So that's out of pocket to the insured. That becomes a real burden because when you think about living. And then, of course, after that might be electricity and maybe, you know, you've got internet and perhaps food, you know, something like that. So what you end up with dramatic of these constant cost drivers that are pushing through the economy. So that's why I'm saying, you know, I've said in the past that, you know, inflation is a rising tide floats all dominant. But the reality is, if you don't have a boat, you know, you're just not going to float. And that's a big part of the problem, that by the time you pay your bills and effectively, you know, pay what you need to pay to live, the idea of having a floating boat in an inflationary storm is a surge is a pipe dream for many. And I think that's a real political problem that we're dealing with in the American economy. Another interesting phenomenon or news bit today is that last week, the unemployment 0.8%. And we like to think of full employment as being somewhere in the 3% range-ish. But what it's telling you is an 18-month high in unemployment numbers in the United States. And, you know, it's interesting to look at the headline and the statistics. Oh, 3.8. But you have to peer beyond that to see, you know, there are 3.8% of Americans who are looking for work, can't find it, or can't find the job they need or want or pays enough. And at the end of the day, that is very, very expensive for people caught in that situation. Now, the media will say, oh, good news, unemployment is up. That means the economy is cooling. That means inflation will go down. Well, there's a human cost on the back end of all of that. And I think, you know, when you see these headlines, it's a little bit of a troubling news report. The good news is that those small changes if it's 1%. That's, you know, that's a lot of people. And at the end of the day, we don't like to see that, you know, those numbers. We into oblivion. The Federal Reserve simply may not have the tools to deal with. You know, I noticed a story yesterday, speaking of the Federal Reserve, that there's a thing called quantitative tightening. And the news offloaded $1 trillion off of its balance sheet. And the story was that it didn't ruffle the markets. You know, they were able to basically shed $1 trillion in assets over the past year or so. The boat. But when you think about what that means, and I know there's a lot of information coming at you fast, but the Federal Reserve is holding those bonds. They paid money for those bonds into the Treasury. They basically bought them from the government, and the Treasury went and spent the money according to their spending plan. And now the Federal Reserve is trying to lighten it about $8 trillion. Now they're trying to get down to $7 trillion, roughly. And what they did was, effectively, the federal government, you know, if you have $1,000 bond sitting on the Fed's balance sheet and it matures, it comes due, the federal government is supposed to give you the $1,000. And effectively, quantitative tightening means is that they're not replacing those assets on their balance sheet. So as the federal government is paying off the Federal Reserve with dollars, the Federal Reserve holds those dollars and it just kind of dissipates. And what it means is the Fed is reducing the amount of debt it's holding, which means the federal government, the federal treasury and the Federal Reserve, they're two different things. Federal treasury is the Joe Biden administration's treasury and he's running it. And that's the American treasury, okay? Well, if they're not replacing those bonds of the Federal Reserve, those bonds have to be refinanced elsewhere in the marketplace. And that puts a big surge of new Fed money into the bond. That refinancing without triggering a problem. And that didn't ruffle the markets. But effectively, if you think back to a monetarist theory, you know, what the Fed is doing is they're effectively pulling money out of the economy to do that. So anyway, that's my report for today. We'll talk more tomorrow, but thanks so much for tuning in. Bye.